Coming up next, another edition of Reaching Out with Gregory Floyd, president of Teamsters Local 237.
Welcome to another edition of Reaching Out. I'm Gregory Floyd, president of Local 237. We're pleased to be joined once again by Congressman Peter King, who needs no introductions. Congressman, welcome back to Reaching Out.
Greg, it's always great to be here. Thank you. Thanks for your courtesy and your friendship. I really enjoy it. I really appreciate it. Thank you.
Thank you. And we're in the month of September. September 11th is coming up. So, one, we want to begin our show with the bipartisan legislation that was passed in Washington that has that's assured the benefits to all 9/11 first responders. They fought hard for it, and you were their champion. Thank you for that, and we want you to tell us how that came about.
Yeah, thank you, Greg. And it really was unfortunate that it had to be a fight. This should have been done immediately after 9/11, or certainly within 2 or 3 years after 9/11, when people realized the illnesses that were being caused by the toxic materials down at Ground Zero. And I have to say, on this, I've been it was great help from Jerry Nadler and Carolyn Maloney. Did a great job. It was bipartisan. But we got so much resistance. It took us from 2004, I guess, 2005, till 2010 to pass the first 9/11 health care bill. And that at that time, it was done in the last day of the session in 2010. We had people on the Republican side who basically felt this was a New York issue. They didn't want to be spending money in New York, even though we spend billions every time there's a hurricane or tornado down south. And you had some Democrats who were afraid somehow this would get involved as an immigration issue, and they didn't want to bring it to a vote. So you had both sides for different reasons who really were not showing a lot of courage. Well, let me give Nancy Pelosi credit. She was the Speaker in 2010, and she did get it through at the very end of the session. But there was a five-year time limit put on it, so we had to do it all over again in 2015. And then we realized, and this was really good intentions, no one meant wrong by it, that the fund, which provides compensation to the families, was running out of money. And the reason for that is so many cases of cancer have just emerged in the last few years. These are rare types of cancer that basically stay dormant for 15, 16, 17 years. So just in the last 2 or 3 years, there's been a dramatic increase in the amount of cancers. And this was going to cause the fund to go broke within the next year or two. So we had to, in effect, start all over again to get the fund replenished until 2090. When it was extended in 2015, it was felt that there'd be plenty of money in there until 2020, 2021. And that should be it. They thought all the illnesses would be known by then. But instead, we anticipate these are going to be coming for years. So it's been extended. We got a lot of help from John Stewart, the actor, who was there.
Yes.
And then also probably the most dramatic testimony was Detective Louis Alvarez from the NYPD, who used to be, you could say, literally a muscle man, a big, strong guy. And I had seen him back in February, and he still looked pretty good. He still looked like a tough guy. He came down to testify in June of this year for the bill. I walked into the room. There was a guy there with this oxygen on his face, his nose, his mouth. And he said hello to me. I had no clue that it was Louis Alvarez. That's how different he looked.
Wow.
He was literally, to see a guy dying in front of you, that was it. And then his testimony was just brilliant. And he said, one thing you have to realize is that this money is out there. He said, this isn't like winning the jackpot, because the only way you get this money is if you're going to die.
Right.
And that's,
right.
Or either I'd be very, very sick or
sure.
die.
Sure.
And so he was, again, very persuasive witness. It came from the heart. And then John Stewart was phenomenal. John Stewart really got into it. And then it just mobilized. And we were able to get it passed. And the president signed the bill at the end of July at the White House. And it was it's done. So hopefully all of the 9/11 health issues and compensation issues now have been addressed. And the people who put their lives in the line, people who are innocent bystanders, kids at Stuyvesant High School. I mean, you know, we always think of it as being the cops, the firefighters, construction
yes.
workers, and others. But also, there were kids who were at Stuyvesant High School. There's a woman, I guess now she's about 36 years old, who lives in California. And she has rare cancers because of this, and she came to testify.
Now, you mentioned Louis Alvarez. I believe he passed away.
His funeral was July 3rd. He died within, I guess, 2 weeks of testifying before the committee. And it almost seemed as if he could die in front of you. He was that bad. But it was interesting because when a guy is that sick and he's making that type of an emotional appeal, but he never felt sorry for himself. He kept saying, I'm going to be fine. I'm taken care of. But it's, you know, it's going to be others that are found to be sick in the next few years. And he just gave such a very heartfelt, really stirred the nation, I think, when they saw it. And then to have that followed by John Stewart. Now, John Stewart and I probably disagree on most issues. He's a pretty strong Democrat. I'm Republican. You couldn't find a better guy to work with. I mean, there was absolutely no politics in what he did at all. He just was on this issue. And I'm sure in all issues, but on this one, he was just entirely just fighting for these men and women. And he had nothing to gain by it. There's nothing in it for him. He wasn't publicizing himself. Right. So he just did a great job. So I give him a tremendous amount of credit for this.
Yeah, and he's not running around bragging about what he did. He's just doing whatever he did out of the goodness of his heart.
Yeah, I know. Back in, I guess, May of this year, I forget. It was before the testimony anyway, but John was still working on it behind the scenes and getting things done. And there was a ceremony down at Ground Zero. They were dedicating a garden. It's like a garden of remembrance or a garden of, I guess, consolation, where the way it's laid out with the bushes and the trees, you just go there to contemplate, to get calm. And there was a ceremony, and everybody was going around, and John Stewart was there. He looked like a guy from the neighborhood. I mean, he made no effort to be running up and shaking people's hands. Anyone who recognized him, he was really friendly to me, standing there with his hands in his pocket, just off in the crowd. You know, he's really a very, very solid guy.
Well, thank you for giving us an update and telling us how that legislation was passed and the funding going to 2019.
By the way, this is one of those things. I always try to get along with people in politics, but there are some people going back over the years that I haven't forgiven for both for this, for holding back on 9/11 aid, and also on Sandy. The two things together, after all we did and do for those southern states, and some of them just walked away like, hey, they wouldn't know part of it.
You know, it's amazing. Nobody wants to help until it's their turn.
Yeah.
But we New Yorkers don't turn our back on anybody.
No, I remember like after Katrina, it was within 1 month, one week of Katrina hitting, Congress voted, I think unanimously, $65 billion for Louisiana, Mississippi, Alabama. And not only that, the FDNY, they had so many firefighters down there. I remember going to New Orleans, just a few weeks after Katrina hit. I'd just become chairman of the Homeland Security Committee, and it was basically being run by the United States Army and New York City firefighters. Yeah, they were there, and again, we didn't. You know, nobody thought anything of it. But now you try to get something back from those states, and they turn their back on you.
Well, we will be there in cases of emergency.
Thank you.
But they have to remember they have to help us also.
And there you go. Because, it should go both ways.
Yeah, because if they don't help us, we're not going to be able to be there for them because we're going to be quite busy. So you're listening to Reaching Out. I'm Gregory Floyd, president of Local 237 Teamsters. Our very special guest once again is Congressman Peter King. Let's turn to another topic. We have, and I lost count. Are we up to 88 so far, mass shootings this year in the United States of America? Yeah. We're talking about just simple gun legislation, not taking away the Second Amendment, just having simple gun legislation. What do you say about gun legislation?
You know, we have to have gun regulation, and no one's talking about violating the Second Amendment or taking away anyone's guns unless you have a criminal record or if you have mental illness. And it's background checks. We have background checks now for people who buy guns in the store from licensed dealers. But you can go to gun shows, you can have private sales, and they're not covered by it. And what appears to have happened with the recent shooting in Texas is that person did fail the background test. He couldn't pass it. But apparently somehow he got hold of an assault weapon, AR-15, and he probably got it at a private sale where there is no law. Anyone can sell anything they want at a private sale. And that's what this bill we passed in the House, and unfortunately there's only a few Republicans on it, and it would say that the same laws that apply when you buy something in a store would apply if you buy it at a private sale, like at a gun show, for instance. And to read what they say on Facebook and Twitter and everything, this is taking away people's guns. This is to set up a national list so that the feds can come in and seize everyone's guns. All this crazy talk. When all it would do is say if you have a mental illness or if you have a criminal record, you won't be able to purchase a weapon. That's all it says. So 99% of gun owners are going to be fine. And I would think if I, and I'm not into guns, but my father was a cop. He always had a gun. I have nothing against him. I'm not into them myself. But if I was a gun owner and if I was in the NRA, if I were a hunter, if I was a target shooter, I wouldn't want to think that crazy people, use that term, people with illnesses or people with criminal, violent people would have access to guns. So I think this is scare tactics that are worked up. And I think 10 years from now or 20 years from now, whenever this is finally resolved, people say, what were they arguing about? I mean, what's, who wants a mental case, a mental patient to have access to a weapon? Who wants a criminal to have access to a weapon? But if you believe the conspiracy theories, it's all a plot to find out who has guns and how we can take them away. It's really bad. Also with assault weapons, I don't see why anyone needs a military-style weapon. Hunters tell me you can't use it for hunting.
No, because you're shoot up whatever you want to hunt.
Yeah.
You can't eat it.
So why, and again, we're talking about of all the weapons that you can have, all the guns that are available, why someone feels it's so important to hang on to an assault weapon in this day and age, especially when so many of these mass murders are carried out with assault weapons. So again, it's almost any other issue. We're talking about taxes, we're talking about housing, we're talking about defense, we're talking about healthcare. All those I can see where you can have two and three, four different positions, and I just don't see the issue here. I really don't. But yet, it's out there, and I, unfortunately, I don't think anything's going to be done.
Well, let's talk about the fear of weapons being taken away.
Mm-hmm.
Police officers, before they're hired and before they're given a weapon, they have to take psychologicals.
Right.
Then they have to be trained. So why would you have mm-hmm. police officers who we hold to a high regard mm-hmm. go through more
right.
than somebody, a civilian?
Right.
You know, it doesn't make sense. You wouldn't have your police officers hired without psychologicals
right.
and training.
Mm-hmm.
So why would you allow anyone else to carry a
yeah.
gun? And the police officers are not walking around with assault rifles.
Mm-hmm.
So why would you let somebody in the public walk around with an assault rifle to have more firepower than your police officers?
Hey, Greg, I ask that question all the time. And the only answer they try to give is, well, if you take this away, then you're going to take away something else next. I mean, that's that slippery slope argument. It makes no sense. You do what you have to do. I mean, we don't allow machine guns. We don't allow. I mean, how about giving everybody a rocket launcher then? How about
oh, my goodness.
A grenade launcher.
Yes.
I mean, it's you know, where do you draw the line here?
That's true. That's true.
Yeah.
So once again, you're listening to Reaching Out. I'm Gregory Floyd, President of Local 237. Our very special guest is Congressman Peter King. Let's talk about the Teamsters pension plan and pension plans that are going broke. And the effort to try to save and shore up and make solvent pension funds. The Teamsters pension plan, for those who are listening, is not the one that my union's in. We're in NYSERS. Yeah. So anybody listening to that, don't start a conversation. We're in great shape. We're talking about the Central States Pension Fund that's located in Central States, multi-employer. That's not New York City.
And there were some locals here in New York, not anything involved with you at all.
Not like, local 237.
No, but others on Long Island, for instance, have been hit by this. Yeah, these are multi-employer pension funds, and the unions did everything the right way. The funds were there, but a number of these companies are going out of business. Part of it could be because of the changes in trucking laws and others. So you have, especially in Wisconsin, Ohio in particular, really getting hit hard, but also a number here on Long Island. On Long Island and actually upstate too, I think, but certainly on Long Island. And we had the Butch Lewis Act, which I'm the main Republican co-sponsor. Congressman Neal from Massachusetts, who's chairman of the Ways and Means Committee, he's the main Democrat co-sponsor. And what this would do, it's not a bailout. What it would do, it would establish an authority which could sell bonds, and those bonds would be used to replenish the pension funds. And we got it through the House of Representatives. And actually, even though, again, this is where I'm a Republican when I'm saying this, we have people in our party have a bias against unions, a gut instinct to somehow, a gut feeling that you have to be against unions. So there's a lot of pressure to vote no. But still, 29 Republicans voted yes. So if this came to a real open vote where there was no pressure, I'm sure you'd get a good number of Republicans. So anyway, we had 29 Republicans that passed by a very large number. And now it's over in the Senate. And I'm hearing the same arguments from people that I heard on the 9/11 healthcare bill. Oh, these unions, they're all corrupt. They're wasting all the money. You say, no, this has nothing to do with the unions. They're being penalized for it, but it's because companies went under. Companies went bankrupt. Companies, and in many cases, because of changes in federal law. And if you're a person, you're in your 40s, 50s, early 60s, you planning your retirement, and the pensions are always considered sacrosanct. And suddenly to find out that you could lose a lot of your pension, maybe in some cases all of your pension, and it's now it's you know, it's these you know a few pension plans, but it could be others. Anyone's involved are multi-employers, and it's to me it's the least we can do for hardworking men and women who play by the rules. And now at the end, when they should be enjoying their years, the golden years, to find out that their pension is either gone or dramatically reduced. So it's the Butch Lewis Act. He was named after a teamster who active in the union who died. And his widow is down there in Washington. We were having the debate. She was very, very effective. I work very closely with Jim Hoffer on this. Yes. He's been this is very, very important to him. And but to me, it's not a union issue. It's really a worker issue, and it's an American worker issue. And also what it does to the economy. If these pension funds start going under all across the country, and again, not yours, you have nothing to worry about.
Yes.
But, I mean, this could have a real economic impact. And
sure, because then you would have retirees depending on the federal government for benefits. Mm-hmm. And, of course, all the industries would suffer because they wouldn't buy goods, and it just has a ripple effect.
Yeah.
And the union members are not just Democrats. They're also Republicans.
Right.
They're also independent. So everybody has their own mind. I mean, it might be suggestions, might be leadership, might be endorsements. Mm-hmm. But for the most part, union members make up their own mind, and they know who support them
and
on both sides of the aisle.
At the states that right now are mainly involved, which would be Wisconsin, Ohio, and also Michigan, they're the states that Donald Trump won with a close vote from a lot of union members. And so even politically it makes sense, but to vote for it. But.
So that's something to think of. When I hear a Republican say, I'm against unions, and I'm standing right there, I've said, if I'm listening to you, I don't think I'm against you.
Right.
We may have a difference of opinion. Like my wife and I have a difference of opinion. You don't see me saying, you communist, you this, you know.
Right.
But I guess people are so partisan, they just retreat to their corners and this, the talking points.
Yeah, and part of it is cultural, depending on the part of the country you come from. Some areas like the South and the West, they've raised somehow to think that unions are in, everything is blamed on New York. There's a bunch of guys coming out of New York that run the unions. That's their attitude. Like with 9/11, they felt it was going to be a bunch of workers faking their illnesses and getting a smart New York lawyer to get judgments for them. It's just it's a biased mindset, which I find it very frustrating.
Too much Hollywood.
Yeah, right.
And that's in Los Angeles, California. It's not here. So, I just wanted to mention, and I'm listening to the Democratic presidential debates. Mm-hmm. We are not for Medicare for all, health care for all, without paying for it, taking away private insurance. And that will have a ripple effect on the country, too, and in the industry. I think people should have a choice. And it's like going in to buy a car. Some people could afford to buy a new car. Some people could afford to buy an old car. You don't say everybody has to get a new car. You get the car that you can afford. Well, you know what? Everybody deserves decent health coverage. And those who can afford a lot more, they have a lot more. Those are choices. You never take away that choice. And that's how I feel. Yes, union leader, President 237 is saying that. And any Democratic person running for president, I'm telling you, it's a bad idea, and we don't support it.
And I hope they listen to you, because Medicare for All sounds great. You give everybody health care. But in doing that, if you take away the 170 million people who have private health insurance, what have you achieved? And that would put everybody into effect in a government plan. And government plans, for the most part, don't work. Obviously, you need government plans to fill in the gaps and to make sure that everyone gets some kind of health coverage. But to do that by taking away private health insurance, you end up with a much worse situation than you had before, and a lot of angry people.
That's right. The many should not suffer for the few. Fix the few and leave the many alone.
Right.
We want to talk about—
You should run for office.
I think I'm more effective on the outside than the inside. If I did run for office and I was down there, I would be fighting them all the time, because I would tell them.
You'd be exactly a great ally, I'll tell you that.
I would tell them exactly the way I feel. And say, were you like, umpire? Yes. Balls and strikes. That's it. MS-13. Let's talk about MS-13, because I know they're prevalent in your district. How are we with MS-13?
We're doing a great job. In fact, we had a meeting, recall, I guess, about a year and a half ago in high school. It was Brentwood, I believe. Brentwood High School?
Yes, it was Brentwood. Yes,
and that was
Brentwood.
Really one of the centers of MS-13 activity. It was some brutal, brutal killings carried out in Brentwood by MS-13, which primarily is from El Salvador. And it's basically young people who carry out these brutal killings for the sake of killing. It's not even like organized crime where there's drugs or there's women or there's a lot of money involved. This is just killing for the sake of killing, to establish turf, and brutal murders, hacking people to death, carving them up. From the fall of 2015, until the spring of 2017, that's 18 months, we had 25 murders just in my congressional district, basically in Central Islip, wow. Brentwood, and all of young people who were hacked to death, cut to death. It was horrible. And I'll give the president credit, and also the Suffolk County Police and the Nassau County Police, Homeland Security, FBI.
Sheriff's Department?
Yes. Yeah, yes. Definitely. Yeah, in fact,
Sheriff Toulon.
Sheriff Toulon is the best. He's a great guy, absolutely. Not a great guy. He's a great person, and he's a great sheriff and a great law enforcement guy. Totally nonpartisan, by the way. Totally.
I know. I've known his family since I was 12.
He comes from
I played with his cousin, played baseball with his cousin.
Oh, really?
When I was 12 years old.
Wow. Errol is great sheriff and great law enforcement, and he is willing to go against partisan politics and do what has to be done. And he's been very effective in the jails, too, at MS-13. Since the spring of 2017, there have been no murders in those areas, Central Islip, Brentwood. I can go through all this, but they're the two main ones in that area. And the community is responding well. And the people, what bothered me in the beginning was we were going in there after, I was supporting it, but we had going in after them, again, FBI, Homeland Security, police, Nassau Suffolk Police, with getting, and also the Justice Department heavily involved, and the sheriff, as you said. And you had some of the local, the political people saying that that you're targeting them because they're Hispanics, you're trying to get rid of immigrants. The people who were being hurt the most were immigrants themselves.
Yes.
In many cases, these were undocumented immigrants living in these communities who were afraid to go to the police.
Right.
So instead, their kids are getting butchered and killed. So the people who were being protected were the immigrants themselves, the people who needed it
That's
the most.
Yes.
And there's been, again, almost no abuse that I'm aware of. It's been, there may be the occasional case where the wrong person was picked up, but that can happen any time. But on the other hand, MS-13 is on defense. They're still there, but they're basically in hiding, and they're underground.
Yeah. But, you know, we have members who work at J-58.
Mm-hmm.
I hear at night there's a problem with the MS-13 because they try to use J-58 to clean their money.
Ah, okay.
So I believe J-58 was looking into hiring a couple of sheriffs to work moonlight at night to try to clear up that problem.
Okay. By the way, some of these security people from your union who are in the high schools do a great job, by the way. They're
wonderful.
And they work closely with the police. It's tremendous cooperation. So I want to give them credit while I'm here,
Thank you. And the ones at J-58, they're the tellers, and they operate the machines and the betting. So that's just wonderful.
He mentioned Errol Toulon, the sheriff. He is a really tremendous asset we have.
Yes.
And I didn't vote for him.
Our families are connected, too.
Really? Okay.
His father worked with my father-in-law in corrections.
Wow, okay.
So then I found that connection years later when I met my wife and started talking to his father. And he said, Cecil Toulon. I said, I knew a Toulon. I played baseball with him. And then the connection came full circle. So at his swearing in, the family was there, and I hadn't seen them in, it must have been 40 years.
Wow.
So we were all together once again.
Great guy.
But I have 1 minute. Did you want to say something about the Mets before we leave?
Well, there's not too much I can say about it. I'm a Met fan. I've been a Met fan from the start.
Yes.
And this year, I really got my hopes up. I should have known better, I guess. But they were moving. And then seeing the game they lost just the other night, down up by 6 runs, and to lose it in the ninth inning.
That's a heartbreaker.
But I am a Met fan. I stick with the Mets. I used to be a Brooklyn Dodger fan. The Mets, to me, they represent the blue-collar working people. From Queens, they're in there. But, God, they always seem to find a way to break your heart in the end.
Yes, they do. But you know what? The season's not over.
They still got a shot. Yeah.
So maybe they'll get us a one-game playoff that we're looking for.
That's it. I went to the last one they had against the Giants in 2016. Remember that? And they lost
that.
In the eighth and ninth inning. A guy hit a home run for the Giants.
Yes. But listen, unfortunately, that's all the time we have for Reaching Out. Thank you. You've been, once again, a wonderful guest. This is Gregory Floyd, President Local 237. Thank you, Congressman Peter King, once again.
Thank you, Greg. Thank you very much.
Thanks for listening, and don't forget to tune in again each and every Saturday at this same time for another edition of Reaching Out with Gregory Floyd, president of Teamsters Local 237.